The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're back in the comfortable studio at Edmond, Oklahoma, after spending a couple of days on the road with the young people in Branson, Missouri. Quite a few venues in Branson were only opening yesterday, July 1st, because of the virus concerns. So it was great to be able to get out into an open theater and to give the young people an opportunity to grow. And as I explained on yesterday's show, by the way, many of you know we couldn't get the live stream working, so Richard was able to sub in right at the last minute and did an outstanding job. And we were able to continue recording our program, and so that's available as a podcast. I didn't check YouTube this morning, but I think you can still get Richard's program on YouTube, and then you can get the audio on my program or at the trumpet.com website. So lots of different options if you're one to keep up with all of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show programs. But we had one comment. Really glad this recording was saved. Celtic Throne updates are really welcome, and we have a little bit more feedback from yesterday's performance in Branson. They had an early morning performance, 10 a.m. on Wednesday, and the dancers, the musicians, the performers, everyone, it was even better than the night before. There were a little bit less people there for the second showing, but I think the crowd there was more excited than the night before. But as you heard on the podcast from yesterday, we've just gotten excellent feedback. One lady in particular, my brother-in-law, was talking to this listener or this viewer that was just astounded by it all, and he explained to her that the last showing would be back here in Edmond on July 7th, so next week. And her reaction was, next week? And then it's over? She said, this is a show that needs to go on and on and on. She said, more people need to see this. Nobody knows about it yet. Nobody knows about it. So she encouraged us to just continue with these Celtic Throne performances. So the audiences have been small, or at least they were in Branson. I think it looks like we've got 500 or so seats sold already for Sunday's performance. And the fact that it comes on the weekend of July 4th, by the way, I just think it worked out perfectly for the timing and everything, even though the rest of the world is struggling to come out of lockdown. And I'll talk a little bit more about the so-called second wave here in just a second. But just to sum up from the last couple of days, I think, as I said on yesterday's podcast, I think the experience for the young people was just tremendous. To get up into Branson, to see a stage that was maybe about half the size of ours here at Edmond, and then to have to adjust to the different lighting schemes. And then the background was this kind of 1970s LED lighting instead of the brilliant psych that we have behind our stage here at Edmond. So lots of differences, but to see the performers adapt to those changes and to grow in the process, as I encourage them to do, was quite inspiring. So here we have a montage of some of the people that viewed yesterday's program, their reaction to Celtic Throne.
I think it's very good and worth coming to see.
I think the young man that took the lead in the dancing, I can't remember, I don't know his name, but yes, he did an amazing job. Reminded me of Flatley.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
Did a great job.
I have few words. It was great. I loved it. I think my favorite was the very last with the lightning and the thunder. And yeah, that was my favorite.
I think it's amazing. It's the footwork is so intricate, and they all have like that showmanship quality. I love Celtic music, and I love watching river dancing and that sort of thing, and I was just tired of being cooped up at home. It's really, really good. I think it's very similar, and they do excellent job.
I'm really impressed with how limber everybody is, and it's amazing. I can't wait to see John imitate it when we get home.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to teach them how to do it.
Yeah.
We actually were here watching the Duttons, and we saw a little preview of it, and so we were excited. We love Celtic dancing.
I don't know. I loved it. They were really good. I wish I could dance like that.
I like when they all are doing it at the same time, and it's driving the rhythm in the floor, and it just kind of, yeah, when they're dancing as a group, it's amazing.
Yeah, get that big line there.
I mean, they're good individually too, but it's powerful when they're all in sync and everything. So,
I'm impressed with how young they are too. You know, the little ones coming out, and they're all just perfect. You know, I wonder how many hours it takes them to practice and just over and over and over. Yeah, yeah. That's wonderful.
I love the little ones. I love when the little ones come out. Even she was like, oh, they're so cute.
Yeah. You know what? What I find interesting is the synchronization. And I like watching the guys because the girls too, but the guys just get up there for being guys. And they're just bigger. And it's a fool, they go flying. And so I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's like high.
Yeah.
A lot of discipline, a lot of practice. It's very obvious that they have put in many, many hours of practice for this.
I loved it a lot. Tap dancing was great and made me just happy watching it.
It's just a great show. My daughter's loving it.
I like the ballet part. Great.
That's the daughter there. She loves the ballet part, Hannah Worrell. The other one before those two said that it just made me happy watching it. And someone else commented on how it's nice to get out after being cooped up for this long. So it's great to see the positive reaction for those that are able to see Celtic Throne. We have the online production, and I think that's going to be as they return now to Edmund and return to the bigger stage and return to all of the special effects that we're able to use here at Armstrong Auditorium. We're excited to see the performance this Sunday. And if you're out and about, or if you're somewhere halfway around the world, you can view this online. Joel Hilliker wrote about this yesterday in his trumpet brief. But that's coming up this Sunday, July 5th, 2 p.m. in the afternoon, Oklahoma time. So you can make the adjustment for wherever you are, whatever time zone you're in, and go to thetrumpet.com. And set up an account. I haven't tried it myself, but if you go to thetrumpet.com, there's this big banner right at the top of the homepage that will allow for you to set things up to view Celtic Throne. I think the cost for someone watching out in the field is $8. So a great way to spend your July 4th weekend if you're in the United States of America. It's a weekend of fireworks and patriotism, a holiday weekend for those of us here in the U.S. So this would be a great way, I think, of the American medley that's in the second half of the show, and just how well received that will be come Sunday afternoon. So all of this happening, and it just puts, as someone was just saying there, it puts a smile on our face. It makes us happy. And yet you look at the headlines, and I've talked over the last week and a half about the timing of this program, and you look at the headlines and all of the negativity, Boston voting to remove the Emancipation Memorial in Park Square, the Emancipation Memorial of all things. That's now, people have decided it's got to go. We've got to remove it. In Wisconsin, the students at the University of Wisconsin have decided that Lincoln is... He's a single-handed symbol of white supremacy. Abraham Lincoln! That's what the students in colleges today have concluded. The one who set the slaves free! It's just crazy. It says a lot about modern education. And I'm getting comments now from people that say, I am so glad I didn't go to this university or that university. Now, look, we're very much pro-education, but it's God's education that this world needs. It's not left-wing indoctrination. It's not Marxist propaganda. It's true education, God's way, the kind described in Acts 3, when God will restore all things to this earth. Or Isaiah 11 and verse 9, where the truth of God will cover the earth. That's the education that we are very much for. That's the education we support. That's the education we're going to be getting into at the summer educational program. That starts on Tuesday night. We come back. I was talking to Joel Hilliker yesterday. As we make our way back to Edmond, here it is, July 2nd. We're back in Edmond. We're into the month of July. We're just a few days away from the summer educational program. I forget if President Trump's going to Mount Rushmore tomorrow or on Saturday, but that will be part of his holiday travel, the event at Mount Rushmore. And so, as if right on cue, here come the newspapers, the left-wing propagandists talking about how racist Mount Rushmore is. Mount Rushmore, that's in the New York Times, just in time for President Trump's visit. The New York Times, it tweeted out the article saying, Mount Rushmore was built on land that belonged to the Lakota tribe and sculpted by a man who had strong bonds with the Ku Klux. Well, he's a white supremacist, of course. He had strong ties to the KKK. Supposedly. That's according to the New York Times. He was involved in making memorials for Confederate leaders, so he must have been a racist. The one who was behind the sculptures at Mount Rushmore, he must be a racist. So you know where they're going with this. It's got to come down, just like so many of the statues that we see. This is in the New York Times. It says, critics of the monument have also taken issue with the men whose faces were etched into the granite. Mr. Borglum chose Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, and Roosevelt because they embodied, quote, the founding, expansion, preservation, and unification of the United States. The New York Times says, but each of these titans of American history has a complicated legacy. Washington and Jefferson were slaveholders. Here again, you remember in that press conference 3 years ago when President Trump said, look, this is where you're going. Eventually, you're going to get to Jefferson and Washington. And he was mocked. He was ridiculed for saying that. And we're just 3 years on from that. I could keep going back to that soundbite every day, where the president said, look, you're changing history. You're changing culture. What are you going to change next? What will you delete next? What will you erase next? They have a complicated legacy, it says. Washington and Jefferson were slaveholders. Roosevelt actively sought to Christianize and uproot Native Americans as the United States expanded, this professor said. He was a racist. The professor in the New York Times article says Teddy Roosevelt, he was a racist. The New York Times says, and although Lincoln was behind the Emancipation Proclamation, a move some have characterized as reluctant and late, so it's not good enough. It's just not good enough. He has been criticized for his response to the so-called Minnesota Uprising, in which more than 300 Native Americans were sentenced to death by a military court after being accused of attacking white settlers in 1862. So they're just searching through the history of the United States, finding any indication at all that Lincoln was a racist, Teddy Roosevelt, of course, Washington and Jefferson. That's the New York Times. He'll be, the president will be celebrating the nation's birthday at Mount Rushmore. And here are these left-wing revolutionaries that want to see it. They want to see it come down. Yesterday, at a press conference, Kayleigh McEnany, she's the White House press spokesman, she came out to explain, and you can hear the reporter at the start of this soundbite talking about or asking her about why would the president dare criticize Black Lives Matter? And this is how she responded. Clip two.
Why is the president calling Black Lives Matter a symbol of hate?
Well, what the president was noting is that that symbol, when you look at some of the things that have been chanted by Black Lives Matter, like pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon, that's not an acceptable phrase to paint on our streets. Look, he agrees that all Black Lives Matter, including that of Officer David Dorn, Patrick Underwood, two officers whose lives were tragically taken amid these riots, all Black Lives do matter. He agrees with that sentiment. But what he doesn't agree with is an organization that chants pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon about our police officers, our valiant heroes who are out on the street protecting us each and every day.
Americans of all races have protested in all 50 states around that phrase, Black Lives Matter. And the president is here calling it a symbol of hate?
He's talking about the organization. I would note to you that the Greater New York BLM president has said, if this country doesn't give us what we want, that we will burn down the system. And I could be speaking literally. I'd call that a pretty hateful statement.
But Kelly,
yes,
he's not talking about the organization in his tweet. He says He says the words.
Which,
Black Lives
Matter. What's the name of the organization again?
Black Lives Matter.
There you go. You just answered my question.
That's the White House spokesman defending the president who tweeted out that BLM is a symbol of hate. And the press, they can't understand why. They think President Trump is a symbol of hate for criticizing the movement, for criticizing the organization. And she's there presenting some facts, but they're not going to accept it. They're not going to accept it. They will not let this go. This is a narrative that they're going to hold on to, well, at least through the election. Richard sent me a story from the UK about Prince Harry. He spoke at the Diana Awards. I'm not familiar with that, but I guess it has something to do with his mother. In any event, a few quotes here. My wife said recently, this is Prince Harry, that our generation and the ones before us haven't done enough to right the wrongs of the past. So here comes more self-loathing from Prince Harry. You remember at the costume party years ago when he wore the Nazi uniform? This is Prince Harry lecturing us, telling the rest of us in the United States, in Great Britain, that we're all, if we're white, we're all racist. He says, I too am sorry. Sorry that we haven't got the world to the place that you deserve it to be. He's apologizing to the world, I guess. It says, institutional racism has no place in our societies, yet it is still endemic. Unconscious bias must be acknowledged without blame to create a better world for all of you. I guess we could have gotten these sound bites, but it's like a broken record, isn't it? They're all saying the same thing, day in and day out, day after day after day. Celtic Throne comes at the right time. What a refreshing message it is. How positive it is. How wonderful it is. How uplifting. It made me happy. It made me happy, said one of the patrons. And we need it in a world full of negativity. The other narrative, of course, that the press won't let go of is the so-called second wave. Richard sent me this tweet showing how this increase in the number of cases, it rides the very same line that the increase in testing does. And so the president is right. The hospitals are equipped now, and people are going back to hospitals. They were staying away from them for the longest time because we were told that this was going to kill everybody. As it happens, it's just basically the nursing homes. Elderly people, in most cases there even, with other health conditions, other health problems, underlying conditions. You look at the graph or the curve that's been flattened. The deaths, they just keep going down week in and week out. And yet the press is, well, they're just obsessed with returning back to lockdown mode, lockdown status. They want everything to shut down. They want the economy to grind to a halt. And so they're going to go with this. And as I said last week, to have Governor Cuomo out there, of all people, lecturing the other governors of the United States. I'll just play, this is actually a shorter clip from what he said last week. This is the one, I played a longer version of this last week, where he was criticizing Ron DeSantis and other red state governors for reopening too soon. And here's Governor Cuomo of New York, his response to that, or his reaction, clip one.
Oh, I say to them all, look at the numbers. You played politics with this virus and you lost. You told the people of your state and you told the people of this country, White House, don't worry about it. Just open up, go about your business. This is all democratic hyperbole. Oh, really? Now you see 27 states with the numbers going up. You see the death projections going up. You see the economy going down. It was never politics. It was always science. And they were in denial. And denial is not a life strategy.
That's Governor Cuomo last week saying that these other governors are playing politics and they're losing because of it. I was looking at the daily death rate. Of course, it's way down even in New York. But as of last week and through last weekend, New York still had more deaths each day than Florida and Texas. Now, maybe it's a little different this week. But here he is. And there's actually people, the fact checker at the Washington Post tweeted out that New York, I mean, that's a state that knows how to flatten the curve. And so the death rate, now that it's down in New York, if you look at graphs, of course, it looks impressive because it was way up. They were losing like, what, 700-800 people a day. And then now it's down about 50 or 40 per day, 35. And the press, they're praising that state. They're praising this governor. And meanwhile, you've got other states. And they've got a daily death rate of, what, 35, 40, 45? Pretty small. Florida has a huge population. It's bigger than the state of New York. And yet you look at the coverage. Florida's doing a horrible job. Texas. Of course, at this show, we look at the numbers. Look at the death rate. Forget about the headlines about the rate of infections, all of these young people that are getting it, and that are not dying, leave that aside and just go. You have the tracker. You can look at the daily death count and you can see the curve for yourself. But people won't do that. They'll just get a headline at CNN and think that everyone's going to die. Heather McDonald, she had an article last week, and she said, what virtually every fear-mongering story on America's allegedly precarious situation leaves out, however, is the steadily dropping daily death numbers from a high of 2,693 on April 21 to 808 on June 24th. So just last week. The April high was driven by New York City. New York City and its environs. Those New York death numbers have declined, but they have not been replaced by deaths in the rest of the country. This should be good news. Instead, it is no news. You see, instead, it gets no coverage. Instead, you hear about the rate of infections. It's going up. So we've got to panic. We've got to be absolute, just frightened. Scaremongering. That's the tone of the coverage. It says in May, this is Heather McDonald, it says in May, Georgia was the main target of expert contempt for its allegedly premature reopening. Since then, the media have gone silent due to the state's truly discouraging downward daily death toll. From a high of 119 on April 7, long before the reopenings, to 10 on June 24th. So that's completely ignored. And then listen to this conclusion. It says, meanwhile, daily deaths from heart disease and cancer, about 3,400 a day combined, go ignored by the press. So they don't care. They don't care about people's health. They're not concerned about people dying because, as I've noted so many times before, people are dying every day, thousands and thousands of them. They're dying every day, 3,400 a day combined, heart disease and cancer. Well, that's not an infectious disease, they'll say. But look at how much more deadly these other diseases are. And even coronavirus, as we've noted, it preys on the ones that are struggling or suffering from these kinds of diseases. So there are answers. There are solutions to these problems, to this pandemic. But you're not going to get answers. You're not going to get solutions presented in the media coverage today. It's all about the hype. It's all about the sensationalism. It's certainly not about the facts. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a study about how we're in training. Those in God's church today, those young people coming into the summer educational program next week, they are in training to rule this world, and this world desperately needs new leaders. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A child is a miraculous blessing from God, an opportunity to build his family. In his word, God says to train them up in the way that they should go, so that when they are old, they will not depart from it. But how should you train up your child? Most parents do not know. Most parenting books offer only limited help because their authors do not understand the purpose and potential of your child's mind. As a result, millions of children grow up to be hopeless without any direction in life. Many come from broken homes. Many do not have a home. This is why so many young people become delinquent, rebellious, and unsuccessful as teenagers and adults. But you can rear successful, jubilant children and avoid the heartache of an unhappy and miserable home. God has outlined how to rear obedient children in His Word. Our free book, Child Rearing with Vision, will show you how to raise children that follow after God's abundant way of life. It will help you build a strong, united family. It will help you bring God's love into your child rearing, and it will guide you through the momentous journey of preparing your child to serve God the Father forever. Request your free copy of Child Rearing with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
I'll start the segment with a little more feedback from one of our listeners in Canada. And he writes, "We just want to pass on our gratitude and appreciation for the program. This is a long overdue message. But recently the program you have presented, or the programs you've presented, have been truly a breath of fresh air in a very polluted and off-course world. And we felt the need to thank you. A big thank you to Mr. Palmer for the last two programs he presented, which were wonderful history lessons. Though we were taught history in our high school years, we learned a lot during these programs. A lot that was omitted from the lesson plans, especially the effort the British Empire initiated to put an end to slavery throughout the world. It says the Celtic throne was the icing on the cake this past week. We were so uplifted and inspired by this professional production," it says. And then it talks about this lecture that Brad McDonald gave about some of the background that went into it and the message even behind the program. It says, "We didn't think about the opportunity this performance was, especially for the youth of God's church. We know it was a lot of hard work, but it will truly be a memory they will be able to look back on and realize what a blessing it was for God to plant the seed in Mr. Fleury's mind, and to be part of yet another raising up of the ruins in the case of YOU." That's referring to the Youth Opportunities United back in the days of the Worldwide Church of God and all of those youth programs that Mr. Armstrong raised up and established, many of them even in the last years of his life during the 1980s. He wanted to have opportunities. He wanted the youth to have opportunities. He wanted activities that would unite the young people in God's church, because they are in training. They are in training. This is what he said in a sermon 2 years before he died. He said, "I think we have not gotten the whole picture until we realize that we are called to be educators, called to develop character so that we can instill that character in others. That's what this world needs. This is why we were called into the church." And you see it more and more with these propaganda factories that are called universities and the graduates that they're turning out. People that want to blow up Mount Rushmore, of all things. This world needs new educators. This world needs a new system of education. It needs new government. It needs new leaders. I won't take the time to read the verses in Ezra 3, but there in that restitution, in that period of raising the ruins, what God did first was He established the leaders, the leadership. You have to have that first. That's what God's working out here below. This is why we're here, those in the Church of God. We're in training. On the way out of Branson, by the way, I saw this production, Noah. It's basically built around the story of Noah in the Bible. And of course, they got some things right. And the production itself was impressive. It was, well, it was massive, a really impressive theater and so on. But as you would expect, they got a lot in the story wrong as well. The point to take away from it, that they wanted you to take away from it, is that God is desperately trying to save the world now before it's too late. And of course, if you listen to this program, you know there is a cutoff point coming. There is such a thing as great tribulation. And Jesus did say it was going to be as in the days of Noah. There is a powerful message in that history. We've talked about it before on this program many times. But God is not trying to save everyone in this time period, in this age of Satan's rule over this world. God's preparing leaders for tomorrow. He's preparing a bride for his son to assist his son, Jesus Christ, when he comes back to rule the earth with a rod of iron, as it says in Revelation 2 and 3. Read the end of Revelation 11. I could get into so many prophecies, but it's not a contest. It's like Mr. Armstrong said in Mystery of the Ages. If this was a contest between God and the devil, well, then surely the devil is winning. You know, they got to the end of this program and offered for people to come up and see their representatives, those that wanted to take the message and, you know, give their hearts to the Lord, so to speak. And I didn't see anyone do that. You know, people were there. I don't know how many were there, maybe 1,000 people watching the production. And like I said, a lot of it was, it was amazing, but at the same time, it was disappointing because I thought all of these resources, this impressive facility, and yet the message at the end of the production, it's not biblical. It's not right. But think about what you could do if it's like so many of our musicals, like so many of our productions, based on the Word of God. We've got the Paul musical coming out next. And I can assure you that Ryan Malone's been looking into the epistles of Paul and the book of Acts. And the message will come right out from that. And that's all that you need. But if there's some big contest between God and the devil, God's trying to get everybody saved before it's too late. Think about how many billions of people on this earth have no, leave aside whether they have an interest, how many people on this earth have no idea? They have no idea. They've never heard about Jesus Christ. They've never heard the gospel that he preached. And to think that they're all going to be snuffed out because they didn't make the altar call. God has called out a few to prepare to rule with Christ. To prepare for the age of God on this earth. To prepare for the world tomorrow. When everyone's going to have their minds opened to the truth of God. As far as these rulers, these leaders are concerned, here's Mr. Armstrong in Mystery of the Ages describing it, the leadership in the world tomorrow. It says, but in every case, these kings and rulers will be resurrected immortals, born into the kingdom or family of God as spirit beings, not flesh and blood mortals. And in every case, they will be those who qualified not only by conversion, but by overcoming spiritual character development, growth in Christ's knowledge, training, it says, training and being ruled by God's law and government, as well as learning to rule. This is something we're going to emphasize to the young people at camp next week. Well, and all through their camp. That they're in training to be ruled and to rule, learning to rule by first ruling ourselves, living the law of love ourselves, abiding by God's laws ourselves, administering those laws in our families, in the church, and then eventually over all the world. This is a Good News article from 1964. It's not by Mr. Armstrong, but it's by one of the writers for the Good News back in the day. It says, if you don't want to learn to rule others and give of yourself in teaching them to live the right way, you are selfish. You are selfish. Sometimes in the church, some can say, well, I don't want to rule. I just want to make it into the kingdom. I'm not really interested in leadership. I just want to get there. It says, when you say, I don't want to tell others what to do, you are self-centered and rebellious. Now, you obviously don't want to go to the other extreme and just turn into this authoritarian. But we ought to, certainly in looking at this world, there should be a desire, a passion for leading and ruling the right way, bringing God's government to this earth, teaching this world. You have to have the government or they're not going to accept the teaching. It's a teacher's college. Mr. Armstrong used to say that, but what would the teaching, what would the college be like if there was no authority, if there was no government? You need both. Here to teach, we're here to rule. This article in the Good News, it says, if you don't earnestly desire to change this world, all of it, you aren't a Christian. How passionate are you about changing this world? How passionate are you about teaching this world God's way? About taking the position of leadership that God has in mind for you? He's preparing offices for us. John 14 and verse 3, you can see it in the parables. I've got some of them in my notes here. I don't know how much time we'll have to get into all of it, but how passionate are you about your position, your rule, your position of rule, I should say, in the family of God? This article says, is Jesus Christ going to take people who have been lethargic, careless, and indifferent in overcoming their own weaknesses and governing their own emotions and minds and give them positions of great rulership? Is he going to take people who haven't been able to see the sins and the horrible mess man has made of this world, who haven't really tried to properly rule themselves and place in their hands the lives of thousands of people during the millennium? Obviously not. See, we've got to qualify. We've got to qualify for these positions of rulership. The article says, he isn't going to automatically make up for all your lack of effort and just hand you the ability to rule. You have to qualify in this life for your position of rulership. You have to overcome in this life and produce fruits to show that you are earnestly working to prepare yourself to fill the position Christ has for you in the kingdom. We have to prepare. And look, we are running out of time, those of us in the church, and to an extent, those in this world. God would love to snatch them out of the fire, like Jude says. He would love to save people even physically from the great tribulation. But it's only a precious few that respond to the warnings of God today. And the example of Noah, the world that then was, well, it's a perfect example. They had a really powerful scene early on in that production. The world that then was, the world that Noah and his family lived in, and just how rebellious it was, how hostile it was to the government of God, how hostile it was to the truth of God. and Noah had to stand alone. Noah had to stand up for the truth. He had to stand up for God, and he did it for years, a century. And people ridiculed and mocked him. Now that's a leader. That's someone who is truly educated. A God-fearing man. He stood with God when everyone else was against God. And that puts us on the winning side. Matthew 16 and verse 24. Notice this, it says, "Then said Jesus unto his disciples, If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it." Just give your life to God. Notice verse 26, it says, "For what is a man? What is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man," this is verse 27, "For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he shall reward every man according to his works." See, all of us, we're going to be rewarded according to our works. That doesn't mean those who are out in the world who are ignorant of God's truth, who are rebelling in their day-to-day living every day. That doesn't mean they're shut out. That doesn't mean they never have an opportunity. They will have their opportunity in the world tomorrow or in the great white throne judgment period when they're resurrected back to physical life. Such a beautiful plan. It's so positive, so hopeful. The negativity, the hopelessness that we see today all around us, that's this present evil world. Galatians 1:4. That's because of Satan, the god of this world, the father of lies and murder. But there is a better world coming. It's a new world. It's entirely new and different. And it's starting now in the smallest of ways with this church, with the programs this church produces, the productions it produces, the literature, the message, all of it. Here's the parable of the pounds, Luke 19 and verse 11. It says, "And as they heard these things, he added and spoke a parable, because he was near to Jerusalem, and because they thought that the kingdom of heaven or the kingdom of God should immediately appear." So they were off on the timing a bit, quite a bit, in fact, the disciples. And so here Christ utters this profound parable. He said, "Therefore," verse 12, "a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return, and he called his 10 servants and delivered them 10 pounds and said unto them, occupy until I come." Occupy or use it, in other words. Don't just hold on to it. Use the Spirit of God. Use the power that I make available. To what? Well, like Mr. Armstrong said, to overcome, to learn God's way, to learn and understand the truth, to use it, to apply it in your life, in your family. Occupy until I come. Verse 14 says, "But his citizens hated him and sent a message after him, saying, we will not have this man reign over us." So they rejected Jesus Christ as their ruler. That's the overwhelming majority. They don't want the rule of Christ. They don't want God's government over them. Verse 15, it says, "And it came to pass that when he was returned, having received the kingdom, then he commanded these servants to be called unto him, to whom he had given the money, and he, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading." He wants to know how much we've gained how much we've grown. Grow in grace and in the knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, Peter said. We have to grow. If we're not growing, we're dying, as I've said before to the students. If we're not growing, we're dying. Paul said, be fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. This is what God is interested in. He wants to see what we're producing. Otherwise, he wouldn't have brought us into the church. This, as I say, is something we're going to emphasize at camp this year. The summer educational program. Look, the opportunities are there for the young people. Celtic Throne is just one of many. And we're going to give the young people more opportunities to choose which activities they're interested in at this camp. But wherever they go, not everyone's a dancer. Not everyone's a piano player. Not everyone's an athlete. But we all want to produce. We all want to produce. We all want to grow. Whatever it is, in our work, in our hobbies, in our opportunities for entertainment, we want God at the center, and we want to raise up a culture, a godly culture, a godly system, a godly government, a godly economy, and on it goes. Well, you know the story in this parable. One man really produced, another produced, and then the one that hid the pound in a napkin. And then he wanted to put the blame on Jesus Christ for not growing. And Christ took that pound and gave it to the one who really produced. Because that's what he's interested in. God rewards those who really work hard for him. And if you produce a lot, he'll just give you more and more responsibility. He wants us to rule over cities, over nations, ultimately over the universe. Now that's something we've got to prepare for. We are in training. We are in training to rule. In Mystery of the Ages, this is Mr. Armstrong, it says, the parable of the talents, he's talking about the one in Matthew 25, we went through Luke 19 here, but it says the parable of the talents shows the same thing as the parable of the pounds, that is, but also we are to be judged by how well we do with what we have to do with. So maybe some have a little more ability in certain areas than others. But we're all judged according to how well we do with what we have to do with, as he says. That is, one of lesser ability will be judged according to motivation, application, diligence, and persistence according to ability. To whom much in natural ability and spiritual gifts is inherited and given, much will be required. The one of lesser ability stands just as good a chance for reward in God's kingdom as the one of great ability if he tries as hard. So even if you're looking at some of the productions in God's church and thinking, well, I just don't have those abilities or gifts, that's okay. What about your motivation, though? What about your growth? What about your diligence and persistence? This is what God is evaluating. And so there's all kinds of different types of rewards that will be given out when the kingdom of God is set up and established on this earth. In training to rule, that's going to be a theme at this summer educational program. God bringing in our teenagers, most of them from North America because of the pandemic this year, but all of them, all over the world, in training to rule. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.